We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
Good morning. This is Focus, our morning talk program. My name's David Inge. Glad to have you with us. It's been 5 years since New Orleans was devastated by Hurricane Katrina. It was one of the worst natural disasters in U.S. history. 80% of the city was flooded. 70% of the housing was damaged, either by the storm or by the flooding after. About 2,000 people were killed. A lot of people left the city and have never come back. In this part of Focus, we'll try to take a look at what planners and local government officials might learn from the efforts to rebuild that city. Our guest for the show is Rob Olshansky. He is professor and associate head of urban and regional planning at University of Illinois here in Urbana-Champaign. In his teaching and research, he's interested in things like land use and environmental planning with a special emphasis on planning for natural hazards. And he's done a lot of writing on post-disaster recovery planning, also planning and policy for earthquake risks. He has studied recovery after several major earthquakes, most notably one that took place in Kobe, Japan in 1995. And he's been involved in doing some of the planning and reconstruction in New Orleans following Katrina. He is the co-author of a book that looks at this process. The title of the book is Clear as Mud, Planning for the Rebuilding of New Orleans, and it is published by the American Planning Association. So if you're interested, you can seek that book out. And, of course, here this morning as we talk, questions are welcome. We try to ask people to be brief in their questions and keep them focused on the topic, but questions are welcome. 333-9455 is the number here in Champaign-Urbana. Toll-free, 800-222-9455. Is the number if you would be making a long-distance call. So then the call will be on us. And we do also have email, so if you'd like to send your question that way, you can do that. You can write to will-talk@illinois.edu. So at any point here, questions and comments certainly are welcome. Well, thanks very much.
Thank you, David. It's a pleasure to be here.
For being here. Just to start out in general terms, I'm sure that one would say two things, both that certainly progress has been made in rebuilding, and at the same time, it's incomplete. And certainly I'm sure that there are people whose lives have not been made whole, and one wonders whether they will. Can you talk just generally about how now 5 years on the city is doing?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I think you actually gave the answer pretty concisely there, which is that a lot of progress has been made. Any way you measure it, something like 80% of the city has come back. The population is back. You know, some of that population are people different than the ones who were there before. But by and large, probably about 80% of the city is recovered. If you were to go down and spend a day driving around New Orleans throughout all the neighborhoods, you would get overall that feeling that it's about 80% back, which is really good news and probably is better than I think most of us would have put money on if we were betting on this 5 years ago. So that's good. But for the 20% that aren't back, you know, we don't know. It's difficult to track who they are. A lot of them are probably doing quite well in Houston or Atlanta or wherever they may be. But there's a very sizable portion of those who are not doing well, who are not where they want to be, who would like to be back in New Orleans, who would like to get their homes and jobs back. And for them, it's still a disaster. And so, you know, ultimately in recovery after events like this, the goal is to get all the households back to a level at which, at least a level at which they were at before. And so given that, we're not there yet. But as I said, I think it's going better than we had imagined. The other thing is it's a long, slow process. And there's you know, we can talk about this afterward, but there's no way you can really make this happen fast. There's ways in which it could be less slow. But it's a long, difficult process. And the reality is right now, and I was just there this last month, and about 2 months prior to that, You can see it every time I go, every few months, you can see the improvements in the city. There's active reconstruction going on. There's active public investment, active private investment. They're, you know, working on roads. They're fixing parks. People are still rebuilding their homes. Stores are still coming back. And if you look at, because it's been so slow, there's a lot of money that's still in the pipeline from the federal government that needs to go through the state government, that needs to get to the city government, needs to go through contracting procedures. And similarly, a lot of private money, people who got insurance or whatever, who are still trying to decide what to do, there is still an enormous amount of money that's in the pipeline that's working its way down that I think the active reconstruction, which is very active right now, will probably go on for another 2 or maybe 3 years. And so the New Orleans we see 3 years from now is going to look yet again dramatically different and better than the New Orleans we see today. So there's still a lot more yet to come.
Yeah. There, I think you seem to put your finger on there on what is one of the biggest issues, and not surprising, and that is the need for money for rebuilding and questions about where the money is going to come from and then how quickly it can be there. As people have immediate needs you need to address. And I'm sure that in a situation like this, you want to get started as soon as you possibly can. But as you say, I'm sure the process of getting the money, whether that is federal money or whether it comes from insurance company or whatever, it's just you can't make that go fast.
And that's true. And that's the essential. Money is really the essential ingredient of reconstruction. If you have a city that takes many years and lots of money and lots of labor to build, and you want to rebuild it quickly, it requires that same amount of funds. And what we try to cover in the book is from the point of view of planners, the planning process, and what seemed to not just outside observers, but observers in the city as well, an extremely confusing process of planning and multiple plans that was going on. And really, all of this is about obtaining money and making a case, estimate how much money is needed, trying to make a case for the money, trying to determine how those funds are going to be spent by all the different entities that are involved in doing the reconstruction. And it's an enormously complex process, and it's not, there's no one person who's in charge of it. A lot of that money, a lot of the money has been federal money. And, the federal government, rightly wants to make sure the tax dollars are being spent wisely. And so there's a lot of processes that needs to go through. We like to see after big disasters that some of the normal bureaucratic procedures be lightened up a little bit because speed is really quite important. But no matter what you do, accountability is, of course, hugely critical. And there's just no getting around that all these bureaucratic procedures to make sure the money is being spent well takes time, and that's what's been going on.
I'm sure that at the time that there were a lot of people who pointed out something that everybody really knew already, that the city, because of its geographic location, was very vulnerable. And I'm sure that there were some people who maybe staked out an extreme position and said, well, why are we going to rebuild this city at all? And then somewhat less extreme would be, well, we're going to rebuild, but we're not going to rebuild what was there before. It's going to be something different. How did people think about those basic questions? Maybe not so much, are we going to rebuild this city, but are we going to put back what was there before?
Yeah. Also, a very good question that hits at the heart of all of this. There's these essential tensions after every kind of disaster, and it was certainly true here as well, which is that for the people who live there, they want to get back to normal as quickly as possible, and in their minds, what they envisioned was the city that they had before. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, everybody appreciates that it's an opportunity for improvement, and even every individual, not only they want to put back what's there before, but they're probably also each thinking about ways in which their particular housing situation or employment situation or whatever that they might want to also take advantage of this opportunity to do things better. But it's very hard, if not impossible, to you can't completely reinvent the city while you're rebuilding it quickly all at the same time. So the trick is to try and integrate into this process as much as possible some kind of a combination of coming back as quickly as possible while also having the opportunity for improvement. But all of this, of course, it happened. Well, it would always happen, I think, in challenging political environments. And New Orleans was a particularly challenging political environment. And one of the things that happened very early on is I think some people, outside planners, raised these questions about whether the lowest parts of the city should be rebuilt in the same way. And, you know, I think they thought it through very carefully and they raised these questions in a very rational way. And I think the idea was to initiate discussions about how we might think about having some policies that might encourage people to rebuild differently. But in the tension of those immediate months after Katrina, these suggestions were not viewed very well, to put it mildly. And what happened was a lot of the neighborhoods, first of all, it was seen as being racial because most of the low-lying, not all, but most of the lowest-lying neighborhoods are heavily African-American. And what it did is it catalyzed neighborhoods to band together and to do their own planning and to advocate for rebuilding their neighborhoods, which really was a good thing in the end. It really catalyzed a lot of serious citywide conversations about planning, about the future, about risk, about the importance of neighborhoods, and also the importance of trying to reduce their risk. And the end result is, you know, as it's being rebuilt right now, I'd say there has been an incremental decrease in the overall risk of the city. People voluntarily could choose whether to rebuild their homes or to accept money from the federal government through the state government to relocate elsewhere. And most people have chosen to rebuild, but the lowest lying parts of the city are disproportionately not rebuilding as rapidly or as much as the other parts of the city. So in the end, there's not going to be these huge open spaces in the lowest lying parts of the city. Nobody forced anybody to leave, but voluntarily, a large amount of homeowners in the lowest lying parts of the city are not rebuilding, and you'll end up having much lower densities in those places. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the people that did rebuild took advantage of federally funded programs to elevate their homes. So if a similar event were to happen again, there would be a lot less flood damage in the lowest lying parts of the city.
Yeah, that I guess it comes back to the question I'm sure that people continue to ask, and we had some reporting this morning on from National Public Radio looking at the efforts to improve flood control in the city. Because I think as people remember, the city actually withstood the hit of the storm pretty well. The problem was flooding as a result of failure of their flood control systems that came afterwards. So they have put a lot of money into rebuilding those and improving them. But it seems that there remains a question. If another Katrina came along, what would happen?
Well, my understanding is what would happen if another Katrina came along. Something at the size of Katrina, the flood control system, the combination of levees, they have this new barrier at the end of the Mississippi River Gulf Outlet. They have these new barriers at the ends of the canals that help to drain the city, and actually those were the key places where there were failures in the middle of the city. So from what I understand, an event the size of Katrina, that there would not be flooding in the city. But, you know, probability says you could easily have an event that's a little larger than that. But I think what they've done is they've mitigated the possible effects of even events larger than that. If you had a 1,000-year event, it probably would overwhelm everything. You know, you can't build against every possibility. But even if that were to happen, because of what I just said, the amount of flood damage in the city would be less than what it was at the time of Katrina, because there is less exposed housing stock in the lowest lying areas, and a lot of that housing has been rebuilt elevated.
Our guest in this hour of Focus is Robert Olshansky. He's professor and associate head of urban and regional planning at the U of I, and he's particularly interested in land use and environmental planning with special emphasis on planning for natural hazards. He spent some time working in the planning and reconstruction in New Orleans following Hurricane Katrina, and he's also done research in other places relating to earthquakes and earthquake damage, particularly in Los Angeles and also in Kobe, Japan. He spent a lot of time studying recovery after a number of major earthquakes, and the Kobe quake in 95 was one of the big ones. He's the co-author of a recent book that has come out that looks at the rebuilding of New Orleans. The title of the book is Clear as Mud, Planning for the Rebuilding of New Orleans. It's published by the American Planning Association and tries to look at this question, are there lessons for planners and for city government and for maybe for government on all levels, lessons to be drawn from the experience of rebuilding after Katrina that can be applied to preparing for and dealing with future natural disaster like this. We have a couple callers, and we'd welcome others, 333-9455 here in Champaign-Urbana, toll-free 800-222-9455, email will-talk@illinois.edu. Our first is in Belgium, line number 4, right here. Hello.
Hello, and good morning to you both. In the 90s, there was a large flood along the Mississippi, and several small towns literally were relocated, and after they'd been flooded many, many times. Now, Katrina is not the first time that New Orleans has been flooded. Every time there's a real big rain, seems portions of New Orleans gets flooded, and it's just the fact. They're below sea level, not a good place for a town. No amount of discussion is ever going to change the fact that they are below sea level. Why in the world that the government or we and everything say, why put good money after bad? I mean, this is not a good place for a town.
First of all, not all of New Orleans is below sea level. Part of New Orleans is below sea level. And there are many cities around the world that are similarly situated. Large amounts of the city of Tokyo and Osaka, Japan, are below sea level. The Netherlands. So it's not an impossible sort of situation. Secondly, in many ways, the overall location of New Orleans is not really all that terrible, or at least originally wasn't. It's far enough up the Mississippi River to be protected from storm surges, but it's been less protected than it used to be because of wetland losses. Some people have argued that the major difference between Betsy in 1965 and Hurricane Katrina was the construction of the Mississippi River Gulf Outlet, a navigation canal that they say, funneled in the storm surge into the city of New Orleans, which it didn't do in 1965. So we have the construction of that canal. We have the all the replumbing of the Mississippi River so that the Mississippi River no longer deposits sediment and builds the delta. And so, what's happened because of these federal navigation investments has resulted in wetland loss, which has meant less protection for the city of New Orleans. So it wasn't inherently a bad place to build. Admittedly, the lowest lying parts of the city, which are below sea level, are problematic. And as I've described, there's been a lot of policies put in place now to encourage people to build back, either give them the opportunity to move away from those areas or to build back better. And, this notion that so you're comparing to the or the caller's comparing to the small towns in the 1993 floods. Well, again, those towns voluntarily decided to move. And they moved short distances, and it's something that's not it is logistically difficult to do even that, but it's possible. But I'm trying to envision what the various options we would have for a mandatory relocation of the city of New Orleans, whether it be us And who us is, I don't know. Some unanimity, I suppose, between Congress and the president to either purposely move the city, which would cost untold billions of dollars to do that, and result in social dislocations that would probably end up costing us in the long run untold billions of dollars. Or alternatively, just to say simply, we're not going to send any more federal money down there. You guys figure out how to deal with it, which also I think would cause social dislocation that would cost us untold billions of dollars in the long run. So really, you know, you can't engineer social systems that easily. So really the only option is to be able to work with the city, to provide people with risk information, to provide incentives so that in the long run the city will over time gradually reduce its risk. And I believe that's what's going on right now. And planning is not a rational thing. You know, society is not, you know, rational. I mean, we can't, you know, we should move the city of Los Angeles. It doesn't belong there. Besides being earthquake prone, it doesn't really have good access to water. And logically, it ought to be someplace else. But it's not something we can easily do.
Thank you very much.
All right, let's go to Oswego here. And all right, let's go to Oswego, and that would be line number two. Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, thank go
you.
Ahead. Yeah.
Thank you for the call. You're right in the planning. I'm in construction, but I used to live in L.A., so I know exactly what he's talking about. They seem to be building houses where they ought not to. It's profit over smartness, I would guess. But the other thing is, too, I had a chance to go to Europe, to Netherlands, and my question is, I don't understand why New Orleans or places like down in the Gulf can't take lessons from the Dutch on how to build a levee system, because the Dutch basically is being, you know, everything there is built on what they call polders, but most of their land is reclaimed from the sea, and they build it out. But they've got such a levee system. It's amazing. I've seen other places like that in other parts of the world. But it would seem to me that, you know, they can, if they're going to keep New Orleans where it's at, they ought to take lessons from that, wouldn't you think?
Yes, I agree. And, in fact, they have been. Again, these things don't happen instantly. But there have been a lot of exchanges between New Orleans and the Netherlands. They are seriously trying to take lessons from the Dutch. There's really two of those lessons generally. One of them is the idea of having multiple lines of defense. And really the flood protection system we're talking about is now much more grounded in that philosophy than the system that they had before. And secondly, the other really interesting thing that the Dutch are doing increasingly now is the idea of living with water within the city, learning to accept water within the city, you know, having more canals and you know, having bodies of water actually integrated with where the homes are. And the planning process we describe in our book is really, really the immediate recovery planning process in the first 2 years after the event. Am I still there?
Yeah, we're still here. Okay. The caller rang off.
Okay, and I hope he's still listening. We covered the period the first 2 years after the event, but really what began then is a serious planning process, a planning discussion in the city that's still ongoing. They've just completed over the last 2 years. They worked on a new master plan for the city, and there's a new planning culture in the city where they're continuously thinking about how to improve moving forward. And one important part of this new master plan was this Dutch idea of learning to live with water. And there's at least one project I know of where they're starting to think about how to do that, taking one of the old drainage canals and making it into both making it – it's dry now except when it rains, but actually putting water into it, making it deeper so it will be able to store water in the event of – any kind of a significant storm, and becoming really an amenity for the city too. So they would be mixing homes with water. This is a long-term idea they've been talking about, and it's probably going to take 50 or 100 years to be able to implement it. But in terms of some of the adopting and adapting some of the ideas from the Netherlands, this is in fact actively going on in New Orleans right now.
All right. Another caller here in Champaign County, here where we are, line 3. Hello.
Hi. There are just a lot of untold stories, and I wanted to just highlight the fact that a very acute commentator on the New Orleans situation is Harry Shearer, who's known mainly as the voices of The Simpsons, but he's a brilliant guy. There's a show called The Show that is must-listening to, it seems to me, on WLL at 10 o'clock on Sunday nights. He has a film out called The Big Uneasy. And as far as I can tell, there's going to be only 2 showings on Monday at one of the Cineplexes here in Champaign. So other people around the area, maybe the gallivanting contractor, can find a place to watch it, because it disabuses a lot of the notions. It reinforces what the host said earlier about how it was really the flood control system that was responsible for the flooding after the storm, and that it was really this ship canal that did most of the damage. And people knew about it in advance, and it's still not widely talked about, because we can still hear the same thing about how it was such a lousy place to be, to have a city, and it's just not true. One can design for these kind of things, even in the face of rising sea level. I wanted to highlight that.
All right.
Thanks. I appreciate the comment.
333-9455 here in Champaign-Urbana. Toll-free 800-222-9455. Email will-talk@illinois.edu. Our guest this morning, this hour focus, is Bob Olshansky. He's professor and associate head of urban and regional planning at the U of I here in Urbana-Champaign. Is interested in land use and environmental planning with a special emphasis on planning for natural hazards. He has done a lot of writing on post-disaster recovery planning and also planning and policy for earthquake risks. He studied recovery after several major quakes. The big one perhaps was the one that struck Kobe, Japan in 1995. He's also looked and done research on post-earthquake redevelopment opportunities in Los Angeles, talked about the role in his work, looked at the role of planning and reducing earthquake risk, and then also has been involved in the planning and reconstruction in New Orleans following Hurricane Katrina 5 years ago. And he has co-authored a book. The title of the book is Clear as Mud, Planning for the Rebuilding of New Orleans, and it's published by the American Planning Association. I am sure that any planner, any person who does what you do, would say to the local government any place that you really should have a plan in mind for the following situation. If some sort of devastating disaster came along and wiped out your town, or substantially wiped out your town, you really should have thought about where you would start to rebuild. So you really should have an idea what's most important and what are we going to do first. You might want to think about, are there in fact things that you'd say, well, probably we won't rebuild that at all, or if we do, it's going to come later. An actual idea of, if you had to rebuild your town, how would you do it? I don't know how many places actually have plans like this, but I'm sure you would say, well, you should. I don't believe New Orleans did.
No, and so again, that's a good question. Almost no place has such plans. The city of Los Angeles was the only place I'm aware of that for a long time ago. Developed a pre-disaster plan for post-disaster recovery, and it was actually just being finished up at the time of the 1994 Northridge earthquake, and it helped them enormously in understanding how to rebuild after that event. The state of Florida is currently working on a pilot program where they're trying to require all the municipalities in high-hazard coastal areas to have pre-disaster plans for post-disaster recovery. It turns out, well, I guess a couple of things I wanted to say about this. First of all, is I would argue that, to me, I think this is an argument for doing urban planning in general. Mm-hmm. So if you think about it, you know, after a big disaster, you have this opportunity to rethink what the future of your city is going to be like, because new money is flowing in and you're going to be building things afresh. And even though you can't, you never totally reinvent the city, but there are opportunities for making some improvements in some areas. And it's really, in the stressful time after a really huge disaster, is not a great time to be sitting around and having a lot of planning meetings and rethinking the future of the city, although they actually did this in New Orleans. And so I would argue that, you know, all the things that we argue for in urban planning, having active planning processes, having visions for the future of the city, having planning institutions, having neighborhood organizations, having all of these things, you know, having the public connected to City Hall, so that you have these processes in place and ongoing discussions about the future of the city and certain points of consensus about the future of the city, so that when you do get hit by a disaster or any unexpected event, such as massive foreclosures, for example, or, you know, any kind of economic dislocation, that you've already developed some kind of a sense of where you wanted to go and what your priorities were. So I would argue that every place needs to have a plan, period, for being able to deal with these kinds of things. And that's really what sets these priorities. The recovery plan is more of a procedural sort of a thing, as opposed to saying which areas you're going to rebuild first. So your overall urban plan and your vision for the future of your city talks about those things, but the recovery plan really talks about the process by which you're going to do it. And that's really what we were exploring in our research, myself and my co-author Laurie Johnson, in our work in the city of New Orleans, was, you know, how does this process work? Mm-hmm. It's enormously complicated. Everybody is under stress. Information doesn't flow fast enough. Nobody knows what's going on. And our interest is in how you think about managing recovery and what ways in which you can minimize the chaos and increase the intelligence, minimize the unintelligence, however you want to say, in these complicated processes after disaster. So that's what we were really looking for in New Orleans. And, you know, one of the questions that I do get asked a lot is was part of your question, which is, what do you do first? And what I've really discovered over the years, and became particularly clear to me in this research in New Orleans, is that sort of from the point of view of government, one of the most important things to do first is to establish an information system and have data clearinghouses, have good communication systems, because it turns out really the way the city is rebuilt, the government plays a really important role in it, but not necessarily, certainly not the only role. In fact, there's really limitations in what bureaucratic organizations can do in these kinds of situations. And really, they don't own most of the land, but they can catalyze development. They can they obviously rebuild infrastructure that sets the tone for things. But a lot of what government needs to do is to provide support to all the other entities involved. And some of those entities are quasi-governmental, utility districts and so on. But you have private homeowners, you have businesses, you've got all these different entity organizations and people who are independently, you know, going about trying to rebuild their lives and rebuild the city. And but they're doing it in a vacuum of information and a vacuum of really understanding, you know, where trends are going. And one of the most important things the city can do is to help to coordinate that by means of providing information and means of facilitating communication between all those entities. So, you know, one of the first things that I would do as a governmental entity is to you know, set up a data clearinghouse. I would set up an office of communication so that we were broadcasting things on the radio and the internet via flyers. I would have regular meetings all the time. And in fact, one of the interesting things I thought one of the most helpful things that happened after Katrina, and this was self-organized, but this is something the government could facilitate, this it sort of came up out of the ground, was what was called the Neighborhood Planning Network. They now call it the Neighborhood Partnership Network. And they just started having meetings. They got a meeting hall, and every Wednesday night at, I forget what time it was, 6 p.m., I think, and they started announcing to people, and all the neighborhood organizations started to show up, and it was a place where they could actively share information and learn what each other was doing and learn best practices and get inspired by what each other was doing, and this is still going on now. So there were several answers to your question. It would be, you know, have urban planning processes going on in general, have a plan for coordinating the recovery for when that happens, and then understand that one of the most important roles of government is supporting information collection and dissemination.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure that there are certain challenges that any city anywhere would face if they were dealing with a disaster like this. So as you go from one place to another, I'm sure that there are commonalities. Then I'm sure that there are unique factors in particular places. And as far as New Orleans concerned, were there some things about the New Orleans situation or perhaps the way that local government responded to this challenge that were really unique to New Orleans?
Yes, and I would say most of the challenges that New Orleans faced were things that were not unique to New Orleans. The issues of, you know, compression of time, the sort of fog of war kind of feeling after such an event, and the overwhelming size of it. I'd say it would happen to anybody. But in addition, New Orleans has a lot of deep-seated divisions. There's deep-seated racial divisions. There's a lot of different layers of mistrust between the races in the city of New Orleans, between New Orleans and Baton Rouge, between New Orleans and the rest of the state of Louisiana. There's this long-standing reputation for corruption, whether it's any more true or not these days of Louisiana and New Orleans, but they have this reputation, both the state and the city, that made it made the federal government even more reluctant to write a blank check and more interested in having accountability. So these were all difficult problems, and I would also say, as we touched on in the book in several places, I think there are many ways in which the federal government could have acted a little bit more deliberately and systematically than they did. Compared to after 9/11, or compared to previous administrations after the Northridge earthquake, for example, there's ways in which, again, it's going to be slow and difficult and complicated any way you do it. But I think there are a number of ways in which the federal government could have responded better. And similarly, when I talk about the things that local government can do in terms of providing information, in terms of providing leadership, there were problems, I think, in City Hall in New Orleans. And let's just say that I was watching on the internet this morning the recently elected new mayor of New Orleans, Mayor Landrieu. And every time I see him, he's just fantastic. And having had a mayor like that who would have really clearly articulated visions for the city and would have set up City Hall at least as a central point of information and leadership at the time, would have also made things go better. But again, even if we had a federal administration that was doing things a little more systematically and faster, even if we had an inspirational mayor like Mitch Landrieu, this still would have been very slow and very complicated and faced most of the challenges that were there.
Yeah. The previous mayor stepped down in May, and that was because it's term limited.
Correct.
So Ray Nagin served two terms, and so he left the post of mayor. Now, he was actually reelected in the midst of all of this, although there has been a lot, certainly afterwards was a lot of, and still I think it's a lot of criticism of him personally and how city government responded to this. And I'm sure that and we know that afterwards there's a lot of finger pointing. Everybody sort of said, well, it's the state that's the problem. It's the federal government's the problem. It's the local government's the problem. And it's probably, you know, some blame to go around. But do you think that particularly there was some particularly important failures on the part of the local city government?
Well, I want to be careful in not placing excessive blame on Mayor Nagin. He was a reasonable mayor of the city in normal times. By most accounts, he was an honest guy who was trying to do his best. And I think under normal times, he would have been a perfectly reasonable mayor of the city of New Orleans for two terms. But this was a particularly stressful time, and it requires people to rise to the occasion. And for whatever reason, he didn't have that ability to really rise to the occasion that was needed. And I think another one of the problems is that he never really understood or admitted that. So he never really brought in the right people that he needed in order to help him to beef up the function of City Hall. So, yes, I think that was a problem. As I said, I think the new mayor and the administration that he's put together seems to be, it's a little late, but as I said before, there's still three more years of active rebuilding going on, and I think he's better situated to be able to coordinate that.
Yeah. You use the phrase a little bit earlier, fog of war, and it's one that comes up in the book, and that it's a term that comes from war, obviously, to describe the fact that when there's a battle going on, it's often very confusing. You don't know where the two sides are. You don't know what's going on. It's very difficult to get accurate real-time communication from a battlefield about where everybody is and what's going on. And you take that in and apply that to what was going on here soon, and maybe some people would say for much too long after the actual event. That level of confusion still applied. Can you talk a little bit more about why that resulted? I mean, obviously, you said a little bit earlier that really the key is having good communication, and that would have maybe helped to alleviate that. Although, maybe also you would say, in an event of this scale, that's going to be difficult anywhere.
I think this is always going to happen. And to me, that was actually a particular revelation in this event. Most of my study of post-disaster recovery is after the fact. I go back, I interview people, I find out what's going on. And to me, the research opportunity, at least after Hurricane Katrina in New Orleans, was the opportunity to really go and get in the middle of it and see what it was like when you really couldn't see how it was going to end. And this was, to me, one of the most significant discoveries was this fog of war, and that it really lasted for a long time. And we know in the emergency management field that this is what it's like in post-disaster response, the weeks after a disaster. But here it lasted for many months. And I think the reason for that is that really, because there's so many different people acting, and they're all acting fast, trying to rebuild the city in a very short amount of time, that inherently actions are flowing much faster than information can flow. And I just want to describe an interesting experience that I had. This was in February 06, so it was a few months after the disaster. Actually, it was 6 months afterwards, and some of the planning had already begun. And I went, and I was able to meet with the planning director of the city. I met with the primary point person for FEMA, who was in charge of FEMA's role in helping the city of New Orleans plan its long-term recovery. And then I met with one of the two co-chairs of the mayor's committee that he had set up for urban planning after Katrina. And as near as I could tell, these were, at the moment, the three people who are in the most key positions in terms of thinking about how to plan for recovery moving forward. And I met with each one of them. And I discovered that none of them was aware of the current activities of either of the other two. They all knew each other, but they were all so busy. They admitted that they hadn't had time to talk to them. They didn't know what was going on. And because I talked to them on consecutive days, that at the end of that third day, there was this one brief moment where, in terms of what was going on in planning New Orleans, where I was the smartest person in the city of New Orleans. And I also realized that a week later, when I got back home, I was hopelessly ignorant again. But, you know, this is the pace at which things are moving. I think this is really inevitable. And it was an eye-opening experience to me. You know, I went seeking, going to these people to find out what was going on. And what I learned was that nobody knows what's going on. And it was not through no fault of their own.
Yeah. We have about 5 minutes left. We have another caller here. We'll bring in someone in Savoy, line one. Hello.
Hello. I did call earlier, but I couldn't outwait you guys any longer, and I had to hang up, but I did get back to you. I have a specific question. Apparently, this is approximately the five-year anniversary of Katrina or Hurricane, or something like that.
Yes.
A Weather Channel had something on recently, and then another channel, too. And I don't want to quote them because I might get it wrong. I'm just going to alert you that that's somewhere there in my brain. And I want to know if in your work you came across anything that gave you solid conclusions about the dikes, levees, whatever they were called, how they were built, how they're being reconstructed, and how good, bad, whatever it was, is, etc. Is that a clear question for you?
Yes, and there are, I can't definitively answer that. There are thousands of pages written on this. There have been review panels by the American Society of Civil Engineers, by the National Research Council, National Academy of Sciences, and so on. And it's been, needed enough time to keep up with all of the intricate politics of the city of New Orleans that I have not read those thousands of pages. And all I know are some of the summary reports and news accounts. And, you know, as far as I know, is sort of what I described earlier, which is that, you know, they have these multiple lines of defense. They've been repairing a lot of different aspects of the levee system, the flood walls. They added these additional tidal gates. And that the whole system is supposed to be able to operate, you know, reasonably in the event of a Katrina-size event. It will reduce the effects of the of an event that's larger than Katrina. And you know, there are still a lot of people who have been arguing about a lot of the details of the system. But overall, that's how I understand it.
Okay, is this referenced in any way, shape, or form in your book?
It is, actually. The first chapter, we summarize a lot of that material, and I think we have a couple of citations to it. And you could get online, and feel free to download some of those thousands of pages of reports. But all of that stuff is available online as well.
Online where?
I can't remember exactly which website I'd send you to, but I think some basic Google searching will lead you to the right place. There's one report, and I don't remember what it stands for, IPET. And there's also the state of Louisiana has some sort of a coastal commission, and I can't remember the exact name of that either, but I think a little bit of creative Googling should get you to all of those fairly quickly.
Okay, to be helpful to you, if you get a chance to watch any replays of these things on TV, you'll probably find them supplemental and interesting.
All right. We'll try and get one very quick caller if we can here. Parkland College, line two. Hello.
Hi. I wonder if there's any concern about, other than hurricanes, Mississippi River flooding. I understand that if the Mississippi goes over its banks in the New Orleans area, it will never go back.
That's a good question. I can't really answer that one. I don't know in terms of the design of the levees, whether the levees that are designed to keep the river out are necessarily better or worse than the levees that are designed to keep the storm surges out. But I do understand that, yes, if the river were to go over its banks, it would be a problem. There have been some serious discussions about letting over thousands of years, the river keeps changing its course. And there is one particular channel that the river really wants to be able to go down. And there have been some discussion of possibly letting it do that, which would be, you know, quite an expensive thing to do. But that might in the end, it might be safer for the city of New Orleans. But, you know, then the river might silt up. in the city as well. So anyway, that's about all I can say about that.
I don't
really know.
And we're almost at the part we have to finish. New Orleans continues to be vulnerable. Other coastal areas are vulnerable to hurricanes. We know that there are places around the country that are at risk for earthquake. We've talked about this here in the Midwest. A lot of good lessons, I'm sure, to be taken from the Katrina experience. Are people seriously looking at this and saying, now, how does this apply to where we live and what we might have to deal with?
Well, I hope so. I think certainly after Katrina, I know a lot of places in the country were starting to relook at some of their long-term plans, a lot of their emergency management plans. And for us, you know, what we really wanted to get out of this was the lessons on how to think about the process of recovery. And, you know, there's a network of both practitioners and researchers. We know a lot of people at HUD and FEMA and various state emergency management agencies. And there are ongoing discussions throughout the country about how to deal with the next really large event like this. And so we are continually gaining lessons and hopefully benefiting from the lessons.
Our guest, Robert Olshansky, is professor and associate head of urban and regional planning at the U of I Urbana-Champaign. He's done a lot of research on post-disaster recovery planning, has been involved in planning and reconstruction in New Orleans following Hurricane Katrina, and is the co-author, along with Laurie Johnson, of the book Clear as Mud, Planning for the Rebuilding of New Orleans. It is published by the American Planning Association. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.